Item 12, employer audit of the Superior Court.
Raleigh.
This one will only take about 2 hours.
Yeah.
So before you, you have item 12. It's the final audit report on Superior Court of California, Contra Costa. And I'll direct you to page 30 and 31, the follow-up items. Number one and number two, the follow-up items, we were in agreement with the courts. Under the board regs for item number one, there's a due date and timeliness requirement. The courts, the way their payroll system, and the way they prepare their payroll, this was an issue that's been persistent for a long time. And it does create an interruption in the workflow in CICERA and our back office member services because the timing of the reports, contributions, and data files to our member services department and then what's being reported to our accounting to do that reconciliation, there was always a difference. And knowing when these reports were going to be coming in, there was an informal a workflow that accounting and our member services department had with the courts, but nothing that was officially adopted. Even using that as a baseline during the audit, we were still seeing that they would come in sporadically through the year. So what the courts has suggested is under the Board of Retirement Regulations, there is an operational consideration that can be allowed within the reg. And they've proposed a solution that will engage with the employer that they'll be filing by December 15th of each year, a schedule of when those reports will be coming in through the year. And this would allow for them to follow their payroll process. They're their only employer where they're actually just paid bi-weekly, so sometimes it really reduces and truncates the amount of time that they can actually make a timely report to us by the 10th of the month, which is the typical standard under the board reg. Sometimes that is very difficult for them just because the cutoffs when their bi-weekly payroll is being done. So this way we can actually bring this all together onto a standard and a agreed upon payroll schedule that both our accounting and member services can anticipate when those reports, and then we have a baseline that we can test the timeliness of the reports being submitted to us. For the second part, for item number two, the pensionable compensation and contribution reporting, we're going to be doing some training. I know our member services department, Colin Bishop, our manager, is doing some outreach with the courts to schedule that. But this also speaks to some data quality items. We were doing some remedial work on the CICERA staff side when the reports were coming in. And that there was just simple things, just formatting, for instance, if there was a null or a blank field, that would actually reject the whole file out of our pension administration system. So our staff would actually do some remedial work in order for it to load. Without the employer even being aware that this issue and every report that they were submitting would have this type of issue going forward. And then also some of the discrete data points within the reports, we weren't getting some of the required data for demographic information. It's on our I-29 report that they submit to us, which is important for us when we do our external reporting, when we want to break out and do reporting on specific staff tiers, when we want to look at compensation to attribute a member to a particular labor agreement, so we can look at the compensation eligibility criteria, whether it's pensionable or not. All of these things is very difficult for us because that data wasn't being transmitted to us, so we couldn't do a good data extract to actually identify who those individuals at an MOU would apply to. So in our discussions with them at the preliminary report stage, they were in agreement that, you know, we'll provide some training. We directed them to the employer guide and some other resources that we can work with them in order to get that up to spec. So, and then the third follow-up item, which was for a member, that we had sampled. At the preliminary report stage, they actually had identified and submitted the adjustment file, so we were in agreement that that individual's record was reconciled and was brought up to up to spec as well. So that there was an additional follow-up item for number three.
So, Gail, help me understand again. The data is missing. It's going to be corrected for active members, I suppose. This data, is it coming into CPAS or subledger or both?
Both.
Okay. So obviously, currently, there's some holes or missing data or incorrect data in CPAS and or subledger. Is that right?
Possibly.
Based on this for Superior Court. So when this comes in, Colin, how does this work then? Once Superior Court sends us the correct data, is it, how are you going to catch it and reconcile in both systems?
So it'll come in via the import file. That'll get loaded directly into CPAS, and then staff will take that import file and basically put it into subledger. And I won't get into the details of how that works, but the source for all those uploads is the same. It's the data that comes in from the employer.
And if there's already data in the field, again, I guess if we're correcting the data, there's the audit trail again. It's going to show that it was overwritten with the new data because of whatever the report is.
It depends on the circumstances, but yes, in most cases it'll be overwritten if we get a file from the employer. But again, sometimes correction files are because there wasn't anything reported for that member's record for that period of time or whatever.
Yeah, I think it was more on that point that we observed that the data was just missing, because when we were trying to pull our data sample and attribute them to different occupational classes, MOUs, so we can look at the discrete elements of compensation, it was very difficult because those elements weren't in data in the tables that we could pull from. So we actually had to go and go through the sample and do a physical review of each of them and then confirm that, you know, with what we were looking at. So we'd go into their source records, that sort of thing. Typically, although it's the last step, typically when we do the employer audits, we don't want to go directly to source if we don't have to, but in some instances we do. For instance, you might recall for health services, we went right back to source timesheets, payroll records, that sort of thing. For the courts, we felt that with what we were observing was just on the transmission side, we could get access and confirm the data without going right to source. But it's something that's always available through the employer audit process to go right back to source. So that is another step that we would do if we can't confirm what we're seeing any other way.
So on that note, how do you choose your next victim, your next department or employer you're going to audit? Because I'm wondering if Colin could suggest some, because if you've got some employers' records out there who have a lot of nulls, you might say, hey, you know, Riley, why don't you look on these first?
County treasurer.
You're part of the county, all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Follow up on what Russ asked. If you, let's say initially the court gave us bad data, and then we've corrected it, and then we dump the file over again. Is it possible we get the bad data all over again if they've never corrected it on their side since you overrode?
No, I mean, again, it's case by case, but for the situations we're describing here and the data we're talking about from the courts, that is not a possibility.
I think maybe we should explain what information comes on an I-29.
Oh, sure,
so that
yeah.
There's an understanding of what data you're talking about.
Yeah, there's two discrete reports. One's the I-30, which is compensation and contributions. The I-29 is the demographic information, so it's related to the person's position, their organization, unit, if they're a county employee, for instance. There's also a lot of other demographic information. For instance, if if there's a termination, that should come across on the I-29 as well. Change in employment status, so if they've gone from temp to full-time, They'll also have any other related to like an AWOP, things like that. And then one of the things that's really important is when they're onboarded as well. This is if we haven't received their new hire enrollments, this is where we get a disconnect sometimes on the timing. They should be coming across as a new hire with the enrollment date, as well. So it's more of that personal information related to the member that's on the I-29. So whenever there's a change like that, they change a status, they change their employment, what unit that they're working for, that sort of thing. That's all comes across on the I-29.
So before you import a file, do you ever run a comparison to the file and what's already in the system? And especially on those fields that are supposedly fixed fields where they shouldn't change at all, they're not variable. Do you ever run a comparison to make sure that somebody on one end or the other hasn't messed up and you don't start ruining your data?
You think that's what I was asking, like data of hire, date of birth, like I'm saying, if you override it, then how do you know which one was correct?
To what he's saying. The I-29, it's only changes. So if somebody doesn't have a change, it's not coming across on the I-29. If somebody changes their address, that's how we get it, is through an I-29. If somebody changes jobs, that's how we find out what job it is. So what Raleigh's mentioning is that if the job title doesn't come across on the I-29, then it doesn't load into our system, which creates a null value in the system. We don't go and correct those because we don't know what that title is. Mm-hmm. But on the compliance side, when they want to go and look and see what should the compensation be, they want to pull that MOU and see what classification is connected. We just see that we have a member with contributions that works for the courts. We don't know what their position is. Right. And that's what would be helpful on the I-29. Right. So it doesn't affect the contribution or their
date of hire
or any money.
Service credit? No. Okay, that's all on I-30 or whatever?
The I-30 is what...
Got it.
The I-30 doesn't give us service credit. The system automatically calculates. Does that when it gets a contribution.
Yeah.
So the I-30 comes across
date of hire.
Their compensation differentials and any sort of contributions that they have for the member and employer, as well as any accruals like time off and things like that that could affect it.
And the I-30 is for the current payroll, so there won't be other values in there for that payroll.
Okay.
And then there's a separate correction file that we'll receive to correct previously submitted data.
So, and how those two relate, and Christina was spot on this, when we look at the information that's being, any changes to the I-29, so when we look at on the I-29, if there's been no change for the member, and we see certain compensation elements, differentials being paid, and the original class where there's a disconnect in where they were placed originally, and they might be covered under a new labor agreement because they may have changed jobs, so that's when we would actually notice when we do the audit that, okay, this person's receiving this type of compensation. Why is it standing out? But if we can't place them in an employment group or an org unit, it's very difficult for us to deduce that. So then we have to go back to the employer, have them confirm the information. And then that's why, as one of the elements to our employer audits, we review all of the MOUs that apply to all the active members that are in our sample group, and we confirm that with the employer as well.
What would a promotion trigger as well, since that could be an increase in salary?
Yeah, we look at changes over time. So we look at year over year, and we look at discrete months in our sample to see if there's any unusual changes in compensation. We'd look at discrete elements of differentials, if there's been any change between the time periods as well. A lot of times, can be attributed to, a new compensation rate, new eligibility. There was a change in negotiated, so we'll make a note if there's been a new labor agreement that might attribute to that. As part of the process, we use discrete months. Typically we'll use April and November as our sample months, because April, there's no stat holidays, it's a pretty clean month. November, everything is happening. So we also get an idea of how they handle those changes and adjustments when they start adding in vacation, leaves, all that sort of thing. So it tends to be a more busy month from the payroll side, at least what we've noticed.
You have a field for notes, what you're saying?
You
can type in something like promotion. Would you say this person went from sergeant to lieutenant? That's why there's an increase.
Yeah, it will. When we look at the individual member's record, you know, if we see that, and we may even ask for their personal action forms. I know in other audits we've done that. If we couldn't identify it by any other mean, there may have been a temporary upgrade, you know, as well, which bumped them up to another class. They were compensated for that, but then they dropped down to a lower class. We might see a blip in their base compensation. So when we're looking at PEPRA members, that's something that we would certainly note, you know, because all of a sudden there's this anomaly in one of their months. So.
Any other questions?
Just one last one. When you go in there, not courts, but just in general, do you see it as an annoyance or part of the job or a mix of both?
No, I think we've been pretty well received. I know, with the recent employer audits, they've been very accommodating, very happy. Christina, our compliance business analyst, has been very well received by the employer. I think they really do see us as a resource. And just by the number of questions, I know with the courts, Shannon Stone, the director at the courts, actually attended the audit committee meeting, the preliminary report, was very cooperative. And she actually had, and their staff had some very good questions that we were able to help them with. Earlier on in the year, we actually provided them with an inventory of all of the employer notices and communications that we've sent out over the last few years. We talked about different elements of the employer guide, which would be helpful for them in completing their reporting requirements for CSERA. So the feedback that I've received has been very well received. They see it more of a helpful, and it assists them, not an impediment or an interruption to their
business. We've also recently developed an employer survey for when the audit is completed, and we actually have them fill that out because, you know, we don't want to be an invasion. We don't want to, you know.
Right.
So it's good to get that feedback. And since, you know, we've been doing it a few years now, it's always good to kind of see, you know, there's some tweaks that we need to make to our process.
So Central Santa's the only problem we've had then?
Yeah. That's why they're actually coming up again. That's, in
next do you really want to
Christina
criticize?
Wasn't around then.
Do you really want to criticize the sanitation department? I don't think you do. It's a very valuable service they provide.
They do.
Thank you, Todd.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Particularly when they don't provide it.
Any other questions or smart aleck comments? No? Seeing none, thank you, Raleigh.
Yeah, thank you.